Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pro Leagues Baseball Podcast. I'm Bobby Sylvester, and today I'm joined by guest and current expert league leader, Dan Harris. Dan, what's your confidence in winning this thing?
Somewhere between 99 and 100%, my friend. And I want to lay it out there for you just to be as transparent as possible to the listeners. Before we started, we were just joking around with some of the other experts, and we were making a joke about some sort of penalty that we would give to the last place guy. And you said, you probably don't even remember this, you put in the message where you said, well, we got to think of something good because Dan's going to need to do it. And things like that, man, things like that really motivate me to get going. And that's why I decided I had no choice but to dominate this entire league. So,
you know, I'm looking back at your schedule, and the last time you lost was when you ran up against some expert named Bobby. I'm not sure, like, maybe that'll happen in the playoffs. Are you worried about that matchup?
Yeah, you did trounce me that matchup. The only other two losses are to Al Melchior, is like my hero, you know, so it's pretty funny. But I think you probably threw
those ones on purpose.
Yeah, right. No, you actually have more points. I mean, I think you and I are pretty well ahead of the lead.
Not anymore. I've got like eight injured guys right now, so you passed me up last week. But we're going to have a lot of fun in the playoffs. Dan, let's talk about this Bryce Harper injury. Everyone thought the worst, that one of the brightest young careers we might ever see flamed out before it ever got going. It turns out it's just a severe bone bruise in his knee from slipping on first base. How does that even happen?
Yeah, if you saw that, that's got to be the most grotesque-looking injury to not be like a season-ending injury, right? I mean, his knee bent completely the wrong way, so I have no idea how he even survived it. But obviously, he's going to be out for a little bit of time, but they got to do something about these bases, man. It was raining all day, and he just stepped on it and just slipped right out. I mean, Scott, I don't usually agree with Scott Boras, but he's got a point here.
So did Bryce Harper actually think he tore his ACL, or was he milking it, or did it just look really bad because he was hustling so much and has lots of hair?
Come on, man. Look at that. Look at that injury in slow motion. Like, I thought that I tore my, you know, ACL in my knee just by watching it. That was horrific. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's a tough kid, and it's good for baseball that he'll be back at least for the playoffs.
Yeah. Who's the favorite to win the NL MVP now? Because obviously Harper is going to miss, I don't know, 3 weeks would be my guess. He's probably not going to win it. Is it Stanton with all these homers he's hitting?
Boy, Stanton, right, is really on a crazy streak. But I don't think so, just because, you know, the Marlins have never been in contention. And voters still look at that, right? I mean, unless you have somebody who's so, right, clearly better than anybody else, they're going to give credit to people in the playoffs. It's actually an interesting race because a lot of the guys you would think about who might get there, there's multiple guys from each team. You've got the Rockies, right, who are in contention.
Right.
Arenado's having a fantastic season, but look at Charlie Blackman. He's really being, you know, he's been amazing. The Dodgers, you could give it to Cody Bellinger. I mean, the Dodgers are like 75 wins since he joined the team, but there's also Corey Seager and Justin Turner. And even with the Nats, you have Rendon and Zimmerman both having phenomenal seasons. I think the guy who I would probably think is going to win it, it might finally be Goldschmidt's year. I don't think he's won one before. I know he's finished second twice. I mean, the guy is, if you look at his season, I mean, there are tons of great seasons this year, but he's batting .328. He's on pace to score 125 runs, 39 homers, 127 RBIs, and 22 steals. He leads the NL in WAR. The Diamondbacks are going to make the playoffs. So I think there's going to be a lot of guys splitting the vote. And in the end, I think Goldschmidt's kind of win by default, but he's certainly a deserving candidate.
I have a hard time looking past that ballpark. I mean, granted, what he's doing is incredible, but if you move him to like Nationals Park or whatever, and if you move Arenado to Nationals Park, are they really MVPs? If I had my vote, I'd give it to Anthony Rendon. He's also playing good defense at not a premium position, but a pretty high quality position. I actually think Chris Bryant's going to win it, though. You look at what he's doing offensively, same exact season as he put up last year when he won the MVP.
Yeah, Bryant is actually a dark horse because he's really coming on lately. He definitely could, but again, it's hard because you have a lot of guys on that Cubs team. Nobody's played particularly well, but everybody's thought that they're so talented that they'll get in. Rizzo is quietly sort of having a really nice season as he's picked it up in the second half, so it definitely could be. But, you know, Goldschmidt is also the type of guy who I feel like the voters are going to be like, you know what, this guy, I think he's never won it unless I'm completely making that up. I feel like they're going to always think, like,
not.
You know, right, yeah. He hasn't, right? But he's been one of the premier players in the league for several years now, and I feel like, you know, he's going to get the team to the playoffs. He's having a patented Goldschmidt season. I just think in the end he's going to come out on top.
You know, I think Scherzer kind of has a chance too. I'm not really one to give out MVPs to pitchers, but that's an interesting one. You know, Stanton is crushing. 16 homers in the second half. In his last 30 games, Dan, he has an .872 slugging percentage. The amazing thing? Barry Bonds had a higher slugging percentage over 260 consecutive games at one point.
Yeah, Well, I mean, look, I really like, and again, I feel like we are obligated to mention Ace of Spader every single time we come on, but I love that he is constantly sort of throwing out those sort of mini streaks and then showing what Bonds did over like the course of a 5-year span. Bonds is on another level, but Stanton is, I mean, this is crazy. And when I first looked at his numbers a couple of days ago, because I included him in a write-up on a trade chart that we did, but he just keeps hovering. I think he hit another one tonight. You know, we're recording this on Tuesday night off Bumgarner, I believe. So, I mean,
he might hit 60 bombs this year, Dan.
He absolutely might. And I mean, I know that like the home runs, you know, guys who can hit 40 now are not that big a deal, but this, like, you hit 60 home runs, which he is on pace to do. It's pretty remarkable. And really, as a whole, his entire season has been pretty miraculous. It really did seem like, and I think he might have even said something, that he was going to focus a little bit more on contact, you know, and he cut his strikeout rate. It's a career low. It was just under 24% last time I checked. And then kind of in the second half, the power, which was a little lacking in the first half, just has completely come on, as you said, this recent streak. Actually, on Fangraphs, I think his name is Travis Soshek. I think he was a Pirates writer. He wrote a great article, and they had great pictures of Stanton's stance and how, like, it was very open to begin with, and then as of June crept on, he closed it more and more, and now it's a very close stance. And watch him hit, and look at pictures of him hitting. So I almost feel like, remember when Votto last year was sort of like, yeah, I'm setting pitchers up, like, he basically like tanked the first half and then just completely dominated the second half, and it was like,
yes,
he basically said, right, like, he was like, I feel like that's kind of what Stanton was doing. He's like, don't worry, I'm not gonna hit for that much power, I'm just a contact hitter now, la la la, and then boom, he just went back into patented Stanton mode. So this is basically the best version of Giancarlo Stanton that we've ever seen, and it's really great just to see him healthy now, you know what I mean, for the first time pretty much in his career.
I think he's just trying to show off for Derek Jeter, because, you know, Jeter owns the Marlins now.
I'm aware.
And I don't know, like, maybe he wants to stay in Miami and he doesn't want to be traded, or they're just going to trade a ton to get Stanton, whoever it is, but his price is astronomical right now.
Yeah, he cleared waivers, I heard, and I guess there's like four or five teams that are expressing interest in him. I mean, it's tough, right? What does he owe, $290 million still on his contract? But he is obviously a premier slugger, so it'll be interesting. I'm sure they'll hold on to him, but yeah, what he's doing right now in that massive ballpark, by the way, put him in like Philadelphia or somewhere like that, he might have 55 home runs at this point.
My friend asked me this question, Dan. It's not in the listener mailbag, but I want to ask you anyway. If you were a Major League Baseball player, would you rather hit 60 bombs or bat 380?
Well, geez. Probably both. I don't know. I guess I'd probably rather hit, you know, chicks dig the long ball and all that, but I think I'd probably rather hit 380. You know what I mean?
Me too.
Because, yeah, you know, the guys who hit, you know, the Adam Dunns of the world, who used to hit all those home runs but would bat 230, used to drive me insane.
I mean, Chris Carter doesn't have a team right now, and he led the league in homers last year.
Yeah, right, exactly, right? I mean, you know, and especially in this day and age, everybody can hit 40, you know, at this point. I'd rather be the Tony Gwynn type, right, who just always got on base.
Okay, so I've got two more great stats from the week. This one's from @JoeRiveraSN. He tweeted this beauty out. Most qualified 120 OPS plus players in a season. The Red Stockings of 1874, the Red Stockings of 1875, the White Stockings of 1876, and the 2017 Astros all had seven or more. That is incredible.
That's pretty awesome. And the Astros, although they're sliding pretty heavily right now, their lineup is just, I mean, fantastic up and down. And, you know,
They'll be fine.
I agree. Correa's coming back. They're obviously going to make the playoffs and everything like that. But yeah, they've really had a pretty awesome offensive season.
You know, and of course, we've got one from Ace of Spader. Mariano Rivera's career. So he had 1,283 innings. He struck out, you know, 8.5 batters per 9 innings, 998 hits allowed. Nolan Ryan, after turning 40 years old, had the same amount of innings, struck out an extra 300 batters, and allowed 50 less hits. That is just incredible. Everyone talks about Mariano Rivera like he was one of the greatest ever or whatever. Nolan Ryan was way better after he was 40 for his entire career.
Yeah, Ryan after he was 40 is really one of the most remarkable things that you'll ever see. If people go back and look at, honestly, just his year-by-year stats. And it's really funny just kind of the way pitchers, it's the weird physiology of the way you're built. You know, Ryan just was just pumping basically 100 miles an hour until he was 46 or whenever he retired, you know.
He threw 100 pitches in his basement every single night, in the offseason.
It's just not normal. You know what I mean? He's Texas strong or whatever. But really, his career is one of the most amazing careers I love looking at. It's bizarre that he was able to keep going that long. But he was really something.
And he beat up Robin Ventura after he was 40 years old, too. I mean, he had a great career.
Well, he noogied him a lot on that when he charged the mound there. That's one of certainly my favorite moments. And it's good. He's sort of an icon of history now.
So one more news item, Dan. We've got Wilson Contreras out for a month now. Avila is obviously going to replace him. And Kyle Schwarber's back to crushing baseball. So his OPS is nearly 900 since he came back.
Yeah, I mean, the Contreras injury really stinks. I mean, I think he had basically, with this torrid second half that he was on, I think he had been the number one catcher in Roto at the time he got injured for this season. He was really awesome. But at this point, maybe you can hold on to him, but there's probably no reason at this point. Obviously, Avila has taken over and Schwarber has been good, but it's a big loss both for baseball. You know, I own Contreras in a few leagues, and the pickings are slim there at catcher, you know what I mean? Unless you've got Schwarber. You know, it's not good at all. I mean, I'm basically, Matt Wieters or James McCann or something like that, but it's a big loss. But, Cubs will probably keep rolling and win that division.
So before we move on over to the waiver wire segment, for the listeners of the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I used my free book to download The Hobbit from Tolkien, and now I'm on to one of my favorites. I'm about to finish it up, Applied Economics by Thomas Sowell. I've got to say, it's so much easier to ingest when I'm listening to it. You can download The Hobbit or one of hundreds of thousands of other books for free. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/fantasypros. Again, that's audibletrial.com/fantasypros for your free audiobook. So Dan, let's talk about this waiver wire, and it's really not very pretty. We've got two first basemen who are both just called up. Rhys Hoskins, who was, I think, the best minor league hitter in baseball before he was called up. He struggled at the start. He just hit two homers the other day. And Dominic Smith for the Mets, who everyone is kind of saying, this might be the next Ryan Howard. What do you think about these two guys, Dan?
Well, I'm not all that optimistic on Dom Smith for this year, though. I think he did homer tonight in Yankee Stadium. I mean, I like him long-term for his career, certainly, but he's got 14 and 16 home runs the last two seasons in the minors, and one, last year was in the PCL and everything like that this year, I mean. So, I don't really expect him to be a big contributor. He'll probably hit for a decent average, but that's probably it, and that's not going to cut it really at first base. Rhys Hoskins, I definitely like. Like you said, he's got tons of power. He hit 280 with 38 homers in 2016 in AA. He had 280 with 28 homers in AAA this season. So, and he's got great plate discipline, basically a 1-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio. He did hit two home runs the other day. So definitely I would take a shot on him. He's definitely somebody who I think can be a difference maker. But again, at this point, when you're going mainly for upside, but he definitely has it over someone like Dom Smith.
Yeah, Rhys Hoskins, everyone's panicking because he had like six bad games. Like, do you guys realize Mike Trout sometimes has six bad games, right? We're talking about someone with a great track record. Pick him up. Don't drop him. Don't panic on Rhys Hoskins. This is a very good waiver wire add. And frankly, you're not going to get anyone better at this point in the season. Although there are two players who are really hot right now. CJ Cron for the Angels. Man, the Angels are just pesky right now. And then Colton Wong, who's not really hitting for power like he used to, but he's just been an on-base machine, average over 300 this year. He's stealing some bags. What do you think about Cron and Colton Wong?
I like both of them to an extent. Cron is a really streaky hitter, right? This is just kind of what he does. You know what I mean? He'll go
exactly.
a lot of time he gets optioned to the minors. He comes back and he hits 440 for a couple
and I'll ride
weeks,
him while he's hot. I have no problem with that.
Absolutely. So, I mean, he's still been hot lately, so you might as well ride him, but he's been doing it for a few weeks right now. So my guess is the cold streak is probably coming soon. But in the meantime, ride him for a little bit while he's hot. Just I would not be expecting him to be good for the rest of the season. Colton Wong, I honestly kind of have a soft spot for the guy because I feel like I to draft him every year being like, this guy's kind of, I could draft him later, be like, oh, it'll be a sneaky source of speed and power and it'll be good. And he just never really developed, but he's been solid since coming back. He's batting about 320. Right. Finally, he's got an 847 OPS, but the only thing is he's got one homer and one steal since he got called back up in mid-July. So although I think he is going to provide generally like decent production, he's a good filler. He's not going to hit for that much power. He's not going to steal you many bags, but he's like a filler. And I would feel comfortable that he's going to reasonably produce for the rest of the season. Not a superstar, but reasonably produce. A guy like Hoskins is a guy who you go for definitely for a lot more upside, but a guy like Wong, if you're doing well and you're just like, I just need consistent at bats or something like that, then Wong's definitely a guy that you can go for.
Okay, so let's move on over to pitchers, and there is one killer pickup. We're going to save him for last. Another starting pitcher worth picking up, Reynaldo Lopez. Big fan of his. He was traded to the White Sox in the Adam Eaton deal. He was the second pitching prospect there behind Lucas Giolito, but the White Sox apparently like Lopez more, or at least think he's more polished. They called him up. He looked all right in his first start the other day, and I think he's got the stuff to produce for fantasy owners the rest of the season.
Yeah, anybody who can throw 100 miles an hour with decent control is okay by me. You know what I mean? I take a shot. I mean, he was solid in AAA this year. You know, not amazing, but he had like a 3.80 ERA, a 1.24 whip. Good strikeouts, pretty decent walk rate. I mean, he struggled last year when he came up. Yeah, I think he had 6 starts or something and more appearances. And he wasn't very good, I think, with the Nationals. But he definitely has kind of the electric stuff. And again, we're coming down to the end right now. There just aren't that many difference makers that you're going to find right now on the waiver wire. So he definitely has the potential to be one of these guys. I certainly picked him up in a couple of leagues. So he is definitely somebody, if he's available, I'd pick him up and I'd ride him. And he looked good enough in his first start that I'd give him a shot and roll him out there.
Now, what about Brad Boxberger? He came back off the DL for the Tampa Bay Rays, and this is someone who just used to dominate so much.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're more of a guy who likes to add these middle relievers who give them good numbers, which I completely understand. I don't think Alex Colome is in any danger of losing his job or anything, so it really would just be owning Brad Boxberger for the solid numbers. And I think that's fine if you want to do that and you have the room, if you're in like a daily lineup league where you can change your lineup in and out. But, you know, Boxberger is very good, but, you know, he's got like a 2.87 ERA. He still walks 4 batters
per
9.
He's been phenomenal lately. One of the best middle relievers in baseball.
Absolutely has been. But you know what? There are a lot of guys out there. You know, Tommy Kahnle is pretty much unowned at this point. David Robertson also unowned. You know, these guys are, there's a lot of guys like that. So Boxberger's fine, but I'm not really the type of guy. I don't play in any daily lineup leagues anymore, mainly because life kind of got in the way for me to check every one of them. But I definitely think that a middle reliever can be fine. And if you like one, Boxberger's as good as any, but he's not like a guy that I would target or anything.
Okay, so here's the pickup, everyone, that I'm really pumped about. I haven't been so pumped about a pitcher since maybe Jose Berrios was called up earlier in the season. I know he's kind of flamed out lately, but Brent Honeywell is in AAA for the Durham Bulls for the Tampa Bay Rays. They're going to call him up any day right now. He's got 112 innings pitched this year, 140 strikeouts, and Dan, he has been so good lately. His ERA is well under 1.5 over his last 50 innings. He's just cruising right now, man.
Yeah, he's really rolling. He's got 2 earned runs or fewer in 6 straight starts in AAA. He's got 45 strikeouts and 32 and 2/3 innings. I mean, those are legitimate numbers. My one thought about them is, you know, first of all, just to be clear, definitely a pickup. Again, a difference maker. He is going to get called up pretty soon. So I do think that he's somebody who you need to add just to see whether or not what comes out. My worry is that the Rays are going to use him in the way they used David Price, remember in his first year when I think they went to the World Series that year where he was their number one pick. He was awesome in the minor leagues and they just used him kind of as this dominant reliever. Yeah. Now their staff isn't as good as it was back then, so they could throw him into the fire. He's still got plenty of innings left from last year. You know, he's still got probably 30 or 40 more innings to go. But I do wonder whether or not they'll just bring him up as a reliever. But either way, he's definitely an add. He's a guy who, if he does get to become a starter, he is somebody who could absolutely be the difference between winning a championship and not, because he does have that kind of talent. So definitely an add, but I wonder whether or not they're actually going to use him as a starter or whether they'll use him like they did Price a few years back.
Yeah, that's fair. It's kind of like Luke Weaver. I mean, I wasn't as excited about Luke Weaver, but I thought he was the best guy who's about to get a job as a starting pitcher, and Honeywell trumps him. But yeah, you can't really guarantee it, but this is a lottery ticket. You don't get many lottery tickets in the end of the season. So I've added Brett Honeywell in every one of my leagues where he wasn't already added. And I would advise you all to as well. Let's move on over to the listener mailbag. It's mailbag@fantasypros.com. The shorter you keep them, the better. If it's like more than a paragraph at this time of the season, I just I can't read through, you know, a couple hundred every day with fantasy football season. So I'm doing the best I can to get some of these on here. These ones are nice and sweet. First one's from Micah in Rhode Island. Is Andrelton Simmons an MVP candidate? What do you think, Dan?
I like that question. I don't think it's possible to play on the same team as Mike Trout and be a realistic chance to win the MVP. You know what I mean? Because I feel like, right, if the Angels are going to make the playoffs, despite the fact that he missed 5 or 6 weeks, I think it would probably go to Trout. But, I mean, Simmons has been awesome this year. You know what I mean? He's batting .300 somehow. He's basically going to go 15-25. Yeah. And he's 10th in the league in WAR. And that's
he's the
mainly,
best defender,
you know,
in the big leagues, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. He is. He's an incredible defender. I used to see him all the time because I'm a Mets fan. He played for the Braves, but he really is amazing. And the fact that his bat has come so far so quickly after, you know, a couple of really disappointing seasons, it's pretty amazing. So not an MVP candidate. I do like the thought. I don't think so anyway, but he'll get a few. I mean, he'll get some top probably five votes in the AL, which isn't quite as competitive as the NL, if he keeps this up and the Angels make the playoffs, which, I mean, they're right in it right now. I think they hold one of the wild card spots.
If you're doing a draft today just for one season, say you're a big league manager, just for one season, how high would you be willing to take Andrelton Simmons?
So not like a fantasy draft, like I'm an MLB sort
real,
of GM?
Yeah, you're building a real MLB, team to win in the MLB.
I mean, I honestly, this is just off the top of my head, but I would think that the guy would probably be in the top 15 players selected.
Yeah,
his defense is just so incredibly, it's a difference maker, you know what I mean? And as somebody who watches a team that has porous infield defense, it's pretty awesome when you see how good he is. So he'd be like a top 15 player because his defense alone is worth plenty of wins.
You know who I compare him to is Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts is also one of the best two defenders in baseball. Andrelton Simmons is batting better than him. He's actually got more power than him this season. They've stolen the same amount. And I think Simmons is the better defender. You know, Betts gets a lot of hype because he was so good last year. He plays for the Red Sox. But Andrelton Simmons is so underrated. He might be the most underrated player in baseball.
If I'm being completely honest, I don't think I fully appreciated his numbers until we saw the listener mailbag question because, I don't know. I just haven't really thought about him that much this season. And when I looked, I was almost in shock. Like I knew he was doing well this season, but a 300 batting average and 1525 to go along with that defense is really pretty spectacular. And it's really impressive how far he's come offensively in such a short amount of time.
All right. Next one, Ben from Pennsylvania. Is Aaron Nola a legitimate ace?
Dude. Please tell me that you remember the last time we were on a podcast, it was like a month ago or whatever it was, and we were doing bold predictions, and my bold prediction at that point was that Aaron Nola was going to be a top five pitcher for the rest of the season.
I remember it, man. You nailed it.
That's right. That was the big one. I mean, I don't think he's going to be top five because he won't have the wins, but he absolutely is a legitimate ace. I mean, again, people kind of forgot about him this year, myself included, you know what I mean? Because he was just whatever. He had a 4.78 ERA last year, but he did have a 3.08 FIP last year. He was really good. Basically gets ground balls half the time. He's got a great strikeout rate. Since coming back from the DL on May 21st, he's got a 2.79 ERA, a 1.07 whip, and 110 strikeouts and 103 and a third innings. And he pitches in the tiniest little park in the history of mankind. So the fact that he can really do that in that park is ultra impressive. I love this kid. I mean, he also has a unique skill of getting called strikes, which, you know, sometimes people say is luck. I kind of think it's more of a skill, at least in Nola's case. So yeah, I'm pretty much buying into him. I mean, I'm not saying he's Chris Sale or Max Scherzer or anything like that, but I'm really willing to put him in the kind of the tier right below that. I'm really fond of this kid.
I've got him in the same boat as guys like Zach Greinke, Chris Archer, Yu Darvish, Steven Strasburg. That is extremely good company. It's not the first tier of pitchers like Sale, Kluber, Scherzer, Kershaw, but he is right after those guys.
Yeah, and if for fantasy circles, if he ever goes to a team that pitches in and he pitches in a bigger ballpark and or can get more wins, I mean, he's going to be a legitimate fantasy ace. That's what he is. And I'm really glad that his performance has been so overwhelming over the last, you know, month and a half or something like that, that everybody is forced to take notice. Because I've always kind of liked him, but kind of been like embarrassed to be like the guy who's like, oh yeah, Aaron Nola, that's my man. You know what I mean? So it's really good that I think next year fantasy owners are really going to be drafting him pretty high.
So Dan, every once in a while, I go to like a prom or a wedding, and I DJ these proms and weddings. And I was thinking the other day, like, I need a good DJ name that has something to do with baseball. I've narrowed it down to two. I'm just going to let you decide here in front of everyone listening. Should I be DJ XFIP or DJ Babbitt?
I kind of like DJ XFIP. I feel like DJ Babbitt, nobody would know how to pronounce.
Okay.
They would be like DJ.
Well, I mean, I'm the one
DJ
pronouncing it. Nobody else even gets to speak.
That's
I don't
true.
Let anyone touch my mic.
Yeah, but what about when they call you up and they're like, hi, can I speak to DJ Babbitt, please? And you'd be like, nah,
that's
man,
a good call.
It's Babbitt, dude. XFIP kind of sounds cool. I'm going with XFIP.
I think you're right. That's kind of where I was leading to. So I can now be known as DJ XFIP.
I like it. That's what I will call you from now on.
Brad from California, based on how Kevin Gausman is pitching lately, how high would you draft him next year?
Well, DJ XFIP, I guess my answer is, you know, I honestly, I tried to think about this. It's hard for me to think exactly where you know, I'll have guys ranked coming into next year. Gausman basically since early July has been awesome. You know, he's really kind of turned his season around. He's got, you know, 11.5 strikeouts per nine, 2.6 walks per nine. Those are great numbers. He's got a huge swing strike rate. He's got
this is who we thought he could be, right?
This is what we've all been waiting for, right? But here's the thing with Gausman. You look back at his career, it's kind of not the first time this has happened, right? Like, you know, it happens. He goes on these streaks, and then you're like, this is it. This is the guy. This is the one we've been waiting for. And then it sort of goes back. Now, this one, I'm kind of buying it because it does seem like there are tangible changes. Not only is he throwing his splitter a lot more. His splitter is great, and sort of in the beginning of the season, I was like, why are you not throwing your splitter more? That's your pitch. That's why we love you. And he just wasn't throwing it, so I really can't answer that. But also, I think he talked about changing his release point, and whatever he's doing, it's really working. So let's say he continues kind of on this road for the rest of the season, right? He doesn't revert into old Kevin Gausman. You know, I he's still risky, right? And I feel like I'm not the type of guy who really goes with that much risk in the early to mid round. So my thought is if he keeps this going, he'd be kind of like viewing him as a number three, maybe number four starter. Yeah. That's probably conservative. And maybe like round 10 is kind of the round that I'm kind of thinking about him maybe going in fantasy leagues. He's kind of the guy you wait on in pitching, and then you get Gausman and you're like, yeah, this should work out, with the understanding that it's entirely possible that he's just going to do this whole season again where you're going to be like, why aren't you good? You should be good. I've seen you be good. You're not good. So that's kind of annoying. But round 10 is what kind of feels about right to me.
You know, Ron Chandler has come on this podcast, and he kind of rewired my brain the way I think about things in baseball. Like, I just want to think about Kevin Gausman's comps for, you know, going into next year. Who was a guy who was like that last year? It was Aaron Nola. It was Vincent Velasquez. It was Carlos Rodon, Sean Manea. And they were all drafted right around 160 to 190. I think that's where Gausman's going to be drafted. With that being said, if that is the case and he keeps pitching like this, I'll be drafting him around 145, 150. You'll be hearing me talk a lot about him in the preseason next year.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that Chandler always preaches, and he's kind of, you know, a genius in the industry, is that you own the skills. Once you display a skill, you own that
exactly.
Skill, and that's what you should be drafting, right? And so Gausman can do this. This is here. This is in him. We know that he is capable of doing this. And so I certainly think that a guy like Chandler is saying, well, you know what? You gotta buy that those skills are there, and you gotta draft them accordingly. So I think that's fine. Like I said, if he continues with this, he'll definitely be somebody who I think we'll be talking about next season. Before drafts, and I think he'll definitely be the type of guy who everybody will be like, you know who I really like? That Kevin Gausman, and there'll be one guy in every draft who's willing to reach for him a little bit as a number three, you know?
Yeah, kind of like James Paxton this year. Very similar, same kind of
exactly.
Stuff, except, you know, Paxton gets hurt and Gausman just blows up sometimes. So last listener mailbag question, then we'll move on and close with some trivia. Adam from Texas, I love this question, by the way. If all hitters had to be pitchers, and all pitchers had to be hitters, who would be the best player in baseball?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, I guess the first guy that jumps in is somebody like Bumgarner, obviously, because he would probably be one of the great hitters in the game, that he could bat off of guys who are not really pitchers. Or maybe Zach Greinke, because he's also kind of a great hitting pitcher. So
yeah.
Those guys would probably be like the big boppers, right? For pitchers, you know, I'm trying to think of guys who were drafted as pitchers and then went on to be hitters off the top of my head. I couldn't come up with somebody. So I was just kind of thinking guys who throw really hard, like a guy like Ichiro, who's also like a heady player.
Ooh,
right?
Yeah.
He really has, obviously, right? Like a huge arm. I could see him really doing it. I have this vague recollection of Chris Davis several years ago pitching like two perfect innings or something in relief. So Chris Davis with the C. And then I'm like, well, maybe Cespedes. Cespedes has a gun, you know, when he can throw it basically in. Right? So I'm basically just cheating and stealing guys who throw
Kevin
hard.
Kiermaier?
So those would be like my... Yes, right,
absolute
exactly,
cannon.
Right? Some of those guys.
You know, they probably wouldn't
absolutely.
Have developed him as a pitcher, though. They would have just been like, this guy's a little bit too small. I'm not sure I can see it. A couple guys who were drafted as pitchers or hitters and changed directions. Aaron Hicks was a really nasty pitcher. He's thrown 105 miles per hour from the outfield, which is the hardest ever tracked by StatCast. That's my number one guy. Nick Markakis was also a great two-way player in college. Josh Hamilton probably wouldn't be around, but he was one of them. There's a couple guys that come to mind. Rafael Furcal was a guy that used to be really good. Obviously, he's not still around, but he had an absolute cannon. I think he could have been a pitcher as well. It's got to be one of these guys with a big arm, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have to, right? I mean, but you don't realize it. Like, you know, every once in a while you see... forget how hard some guys can throw. Stanton, obviously, has a huge arm in the outfield. Gary Sanchez, as a catcher, you know what yeah. I mean? So he throws basically like 100 miles an hour out. So a lot of these guys can really touch that. I know some of the Mets pitchers, obviously. DeGrom, I think, was drafted as a shortstop. So he can swing the bat a little bit. But yeah, it's a fun question, but I'd really have to give it a little more thought.
Yeah,
I think.
Jake Odorizzi back in high school was second all-time in home runs for a season. He also stole 40 bags that year. He was the high school player of the year, two-way player. So I think he'd probably be a good one as well. We don't get to see him because he's in the American League. But
yeah, I'd agree with you there.
All right, Dan, let's do the trivia. And usually you guys know I like to pick on Dan and do the trivia against him and make it really hard. But last time he came on and asked me the questions, and I had so much fun doing it, and I have to kind of make up for my performance. I only got one right. And so let's see if I can do better this time. Dan, you're going to ask me the questions again, man.
Yes. This is the only reason I come on the show. Okay. So the first, I've got four for you. All right. Don't worry. They're not too difficult. The first one, though, I know you hated the multiple choice last time, so it's not a multiple choice question, but I do think you're going to be able to get it. Okay. So here's the first question. Since 2013, three Major League Baseball hitters have an on-base percentage higher than 400. You can have five guesses to name the three players.
Okay, number one, Joey Votto.
That is correct. He has the highest. 438, by the way. That's preposterous.
Number two, let's see here. So over 400, Jose Altuve is up there. He doesn't take many walks. I'm going to leave him there. We'll come back and think about him. So wait, do they have to have played this year as well?
Yes.
Okay, I was going to say David Ortiz. I think he might qualify in that range. Bryce Harper does walk quite a bit. Matt Carpenter walks an absolute ton, but I don't think his batting average has been there. Let's go ahead and go with, we'll put Bryce Harper number two. Is he on the list? No, Bryce no, because he had the shoulder injury. Oh, he had the shoulder injury. No.
No, no, no. It's 398.
Okay.
Just short. Just short. He's fifth in the league. He's 398.
Okay.
Since 2013.
A lot of these.
That was a good guess.
Thanks.
That was a good guess.
That's a bummer. Behind. I've only got four left now to get two of them. I'm sorry. I got three left to get two of them.
That's right.
Paul Goldschmidt is someone that comes to mind for me. I'm not sure if I want to go with him. Let's go ahead and go with Altuve. He always bats so high. I think he's probably pretty close.
Nope. Altuve is in about 375, so a little short.
Oh, man. Okay, this is really tough, but this is a good question. Mike Trout continually has a high one, of course. Freddie Freeman is probably up there. I'm going to go with Freddie Freeman as my number four guess.
Nope.
Oh, are you kidding me? Oh, man, so I only got one? Nope. Who are the other guys?
So, Trout is second. Okay. He's got a 419 since 2013. And you had Goldschmidt. You just didn't pull the trigger on him.
Rough.
He's third
That's
at 415. Miggy's close.
Yeah,
he's
I thought about Miggy too. But
he's, yeah. So that was
bummer.
All right, so that's one, but that was good. Yeah, I like the analytical process. I like watching your little wheel spin as you try to figure it out. Okay, so we're going to some multiple choice. I know you hate it, but that's how I want to do it. It's my rules this time,
that's
buddy.
Fine,
all right,
man.
So it's is more historical. What starting pitcher has the highest career WAR? Is it Nolan Ryan, Cy Young, Roger Clemens, or Walter Johnson?
This is really interesting. I'm glad you gave me the multiple choice for this one. I might need to recall some of these names again. We got Walter Johnson, Nolan Ryan, who both just pitched a ton. I think Walter Johnson was maybe the single most dominant pitcher to ever pitch to. So I'm leaning towards him right now. I know Roger Clemens was exceptional for a long time, and WAR also takes into account era. So Roger Clemens is probably right up there now. Who was the other name?
Nolan Ryan, Cy Young, Roger Clemens.
Cy Young, yeah. Cy Young pitched so long as well. You know, he obviously had over the 500 wins. He also is the all-time leader in losses. He just pitched so many innings. I think it's got to be him. I'm going to go with Cy Young, even though I don't think he's a top five pitcher of all time.
He's second behind Roger Clemens.
Okay. So it does come down to the era. But, you know, I was thinking about it. There were so many other great pitchers in that era. Pedro Martinez was more dominant than Roger Clemens.
Yes.
Greg Maddux, I think, was more dominant than Roger Clemens ever was. You've got Curt Schilling, who I throw in that boat. I know a lot of people don't want to, mostly because of what he says or whatever. But Curt Schilling was incredible. You've got all kinds of good pitchers there, too. Randy Johnson.
I know Greg Maddux. Yeah, they're all up there. But Clemens is, I mean, he and Cy Young are close, but they're well ahead of the pack. I was shocked when I saw that stat, actually.
Yeah,
I didn't,
that's a good one.
Didn't quite realize. But I mean, he does have, yeah, he threw, obviously.
You know, I want to be disappointed that I'm 0-2, but like, I feel pretty good. I've been in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, I just haven't got him right. But I got to finish with the last two. I got to get him right.
Okay. All right. Ready. Number three. Okay. What current starting pitcher has the greatest differential between his ERA and his FIP? Is it Lance Lynn, Jason Vargas, Gio Gonzalez, or Ervin Santana?
Well, Ervin Santana just got whooped for, I think it was 12 runs in a game, so I think his ERA came back down. He would have been the answer 2 weeks ago. Vargas has had some bad games, and I know his FIP is extremely low. Lance Lynn's got a nice low ERA. I think he's still striking out quite a few guys, so I don't imagine his FIP is all that bad. Now, who's the other guy?
Gio Gonzalez.
Gio Gonzalez is going to be my answer. His ERA right now, I think, is hovering around 2.4. I think his xFIP, I'm sorry, you said FIP. I think his FIP is probably around 3.9. So he's going to be the one I go with.
So although you correctly gave me Gio Gonzalez's ERA and FIP, he's not the correct answer. The correct answer is shockingly Lance Lynn.
Interesting.
Who has a 3.12 ERA, but a 4.83
no
FIP.
No way!
I really thought that Lynn
Why
had
is
been,
his FIP so
like,
bad?
Legitimate.
He's pitching fine.
I know. I honestly, look, I don't do the research as to why the answers are the way they are. I honestly was shocked by that. And I thought you would think like, oh, I just threw it in because it was a Cardinal. You know what I mean? I would have thought that it would have been certainly one of the other three guys. But I don't know.
I'll be honest. I thought he was the name that didn't belong in the list.
Yeah, absolutely. No, he is by far the highest. I mean, you know,
that's incredible.
It's almost, I know, almost a third of a run. I was pretty shocked by that. Vargas, actually, since he's come down to earth, he's the least of that list, frankly. I mean, yeah. So it's a little weird. Weird.
Okay,
one there.
Let's make this one. This one has to be winner take all. I mean, I can't okay. Just get one right. It's either zero or four.
All right. Well, it is a historical question.
Great.
So let's say you're a student of the game, my friend. So let's see what you've got. What qualified hitter? So, you know, we're not talking about somebody with like five at bats or anything like that. What qualified hitter is the all-time leader in walk percentage?
So like a current
is
player?
It, no. All okay. time. The all-time leader in walk percentage for a hitter. Okay. Yeah. Barry Bonds, Babe Ruth, Eddie Stanky, Ted Williams.
Qualified hitters. It's well, let's see. Barry Bonds.
Yeah. I just meant I didn't want a guy who like had one plate appearance and walked. And so
I'll be honest. So. I don't know much about Eddie Stanky. I can't imagine it's him because the other guys just walked so much. You know, Lou Gehrig would be on that list as well. He walked a ton. Now, Babe Ruth was a better career hitter than Barry Bonds in terms of batting average. I know that his OPS, I believe he had 12 out of 13 seasons where he had an OPS over like 1,100. So I know he walked an absolute ton. Barry Bonds had the great late 30s years that pulled it up a ton. But I think the answer is probably Ted Williams, you know, including the 2 years. Like if you take those 2 years out where he was at the war, 3 years or whatever it was, he had like 16, 17 straight seasons with an OPS over 1,000. So much of that was driven by his career on base percentage, which was right around 500. So he's going to be my answer, even though he batted, what, probably 320 for his career?
Yeah, you are absolutely correct.
Cool.
Well done. He narrowly edged Bonds. He had a 20.6% walk rate. Bonds was at 20.3. Babe Ruth was 20. And yes, Stanky was up there. I mean, he had 18.
Okay.
But I wanted to give you like a random name. That
yeah,
you'd be like, well,
I had to think about it. I didn't think you'd want to win that way on the last one, though. That's the reason I didn't choose him.
Well, that's a good job by you. And yeah, frankly, also, a lot of times when I ask you these questions, it's mostly because I'm shocked by the answers. Like, I love Ted Williams. I think he's probably the greatest hitter that ever lived. I had no idea that he had a walk percentage that high. And I feel like I don't think about that with sort of the older guys other than a guy like Ruth or maybe Gehrig or something like that. Because, you know, Ted Williams batted 400. What was his on base percentage that year? You know, was it over 500? I don't even know, you know, so I don't think of him as a guy who walked a lot. I you know, but it's pretty remarkable. So well done. You do get credit for everything.
Good.
Just like I do when I get one right. Well,
you know,
done.
When I do these trivia ones, like when I was trivying you. I don't know if that's a, it's not a word, but we're going to go with it. When I was fine. Doing it to that's you, fine. Like it was just so much about like, I just want to beat Dan. But when I'm doing the trivia questions and I'm hearing it, it's just so fun to think about and talk about. There's like no pressure. I just love talking about baseball, man. I'm smiling the whole time I'm doing it. And if you saw me in real life, I know. You'd never think that I would ever be someone who smiled.
Well, it's a lot of fun, frankly, to do trivia because you and I are just guys who just love baseball.
Yeah.
So whenever we're forced to kind of think about it, even current or historical, it's great. It stinks to get them wrong, but they're hard because that's sort of the course. Point of it. But you did well. And you know, you all, I really like the analysis on pretty much all four questions. So I'm impressed. Well done.
Thanks, man. That was a blast. Dan, as always, great time having you on the show. And I think we're going to stick with you doing the trivia. It's just better that way, man.
It's my pleasure, DJ XFit.
So guys, we've got another show coming up this week, and we're still rolling out 3 fantasy football episodes every single week. So make sure to check those out. Subscribe on iTunes. We've got all kinds of contests going on, a listener league going on. You can follow me on Twitter at BobbyFantasyPro. And my pinned tweet is how to enter into the listener league sweepstakes. We're going to pick out 17 guys to compete against me and Dan for fantasy football. Thank you again to Audible.com for sponsoring today's show. Please support them by downloading your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/fantasypros. Thanks for listening and enjoy your baseball.